Indie Media Global Report on Resonance FM 104.4. Check out www.indiemedia.org.uk.
In a democracy, the ignorant and meddlesome outsiders, the general population, have to be kept from interfering. They can be spectators, but not participants.
No matter how much legal action you put behind this, people are going to do what they want to do.
Spectators, but not participants.
Well, before this victory is won, some will have to get thrown in jail some more, but we shall overcome.
It's time to talk about censorship.
This week in Palestine, the service of the International Middle East Media Centre, IMEMC.org, for April the 5th through to April the 11th, 2008. Israeli Prime Minister and Palestinian President met this week in Jerusalem for peace talks, while Israeli army attacks and the siege on Gaza Strip have left 24 Palestinians dead this week. These stories and more coming up, stay tuned. Let's begin our weekly report with the non-violent actions in the West Bank. I am EMC's Mary Smith with details.
On Friday at midday, the villagers of Belin, a village located near Ramallah in the center of the West Bank, along with their international and Israeli supporters, conducted their weekly protest against the Israeli wall Israel is building on the village land. After the Friday prayers, the protest marched from the village towards the gate of the wall that separates the villagers from their land. As soon as the protest arrived to the gate, the Israeli troops stationed there showered them with sound bombs, tear gas, and rubber-coated steel bullets. A number of civilians were injured, including an Israeli journalist called Israel. The man sustained wounds to his leg after being hit directly with a rubber-coated steel bullet. Jonathan Bullock, an Israeli peace activist, witnessed the attack.
During the demonstration, he was standing next to a couple of other journalists. Only photographers were standing there, far, pretty separate from all the rest of the demonstrators. And he was at some point just shot with a rubber bullet from very close proximity. And the rubber bullet penetrated his thigh just above the knee.
The Israeli army prevented a number of Israeli peace activists to join the Palestinian residents of Al-Hadr in their weekly nonviolent protest against the construction of the separation wall on their land on Friday at noon. Eyewitnesses told IMEMC that troops stopped the Israeli activists and took the keys of their cars at one of the entrances of the village and informed the activists that they will get their keys back only if they are going back to Jerusalem. Coordinator of the local committee for popular resistance in Bethlehem, Samir Jabbar, said this is an attempt by Israel to prevent solidarity with the Palestinians in their just struggle to end the Israeli occupation. Sources stated that around 150 Palestinians and internationals protested near the southern entrance of Bethlehem area. The protest took the form of holding the Friday prayers in the street in the presence of around 60 Israeli soldiers. The protesters dispersed after the imam gave a speech to the worshippers and protesters calling for an ongoing nonviolent resistance to end the Israeli occupation. For IMEMC, this is Mary Smith reporting.
Israeli Prime Minister and Palestinian President met this week in Jerusalem for peace talks, which are underway between the two sides. The meeting ended with no concrete results, as Palestinians insist that Israel should fulfil its obligations under the Roadmap Peace Plan. IMEMC's Fouad Azir explains.
The Israeli government declared it would remove 50 roadblocks in the West Bank earlier this week. As of yet, nothing has been observed on the ground, while Israeli settlement activity goes unabated. Senior Palestinian negotiator Sa'eb Ariqat commented on the situation during a briefing in Ramallah.
Israel must stop settlement activity, including natural growth within those settlements. The trust in peace must be regained. The continued settlement activity destroys this trust, puts any future peace deal at risk.
Next Monday, U.S. President George W. Bush, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, and Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert will participate in a three-day summit hosted by Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak at the Red Sea Sharm el-Sheikh Resort in an attempt to revitalize Palestinian-Israeli peace talks. In the meantime, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert stated on Thursday that Israel will deliver a severe blow to the ruling Hamas party in Gaza following a cross-border attack on an Israeli fuel terminal to the east of Gaza City on Wednesday. Olmert told a rally in Tel Aviv that Hamas will not be able to kill Israeli civilians. In the Gaza Strip, the ruling Hamas party warned of an imminent escalation of the situation in light of the continued Israeli siege of the coastal enclave. Khalil al-Haya, a local leader of Hamas in Gaza, said in a press conference this week that the Palestinian masses besieged in Gaza might be obliged to cross the Gaza-Egypt border lines in protest of the Israeli siege. He added that Egyptian Hamas talks over reopening the Rafah crossing terminal have failed. Cairo issued firm warnings against any breach of its borders and threateningly declared that it knows how to protect its borders. Diplomatic sources in Egypt told AFP that Egyptian troops on the border lines with Gaza will be reinforced in order to prevent a recurrence of the event in which tens of thousands of besieged Palestinians flooded into Egypt on January 23rd of this year. Hamas spokesperson in Gaza, Fawzi Barhoum, denied that Hamas has planned to direct the Palestinian masses toward reopening the borders with Egypt.
We would like to confirm that so far no Hamas leader or official has stated that Hamas plans to direct the Palestinian masses towards reopening the crossing or the borders, and we do not know what the Palestinian masses' reaction will be.
On January 23rd, Egypt experienced hundreds of thousands of Gazans entering Egyptian territories to stock up on goods made scarce because of the Israeli closure of crossing points into and out of Gaza since June of last year. Meanwhile, Hamas leaders in Palestine and in exile blamed Israel for the failure of Egyptian-mediated talks over a potential ceasefire with Israel, as well as a prisoners exchange which would have seen the release of 350 Palestinian political prisoners in exchange for captured Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit. Speaking from Damascus, Musa Abu Marzouq, a senior leader in the Hamas movement, said that his party is unwilling to release Shalit and is ready to negotiate over his bones unless Israel agrees to the release of the Palestinian political prisoners that Hamas has requested. Abu Marzouq also blamed Israel for the failure of ceasefire talks, saying that his party has offered a comprehensive truce that includes an end to Israeli attacks on both the Gaza Strip and the West Bank in return for cessation of homemade shells fired into Israeli areas. On the internal level, Mohammed Nazal, a senior exiled Hamas leader, told the Qatar-based AlJazeera.net that a Hamas-Fatah conciliation deal is far from being reached, expressing his party's readiness to initiate unconditional dialogue with the Fatah party headed by Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. The democratically elected Hamas party took over the Gaza Strip in June of 2007 amidst a power struggle with President Abbas's Fatah party. For IMEMC.org, this is Fuad Azir.
This week, the continual Israeli army attacks and siege on the Gaza Strip have left 24 Palestinians killed. From Gaza, IMEMC's Rami Omagari with the details.
Two Palestinian fighters from the ruling Hamas party have been reportedly killed by two Israeli airstrikes on the southern part of the Gaza Strip on a Friday. Palestinian medical sources reported that Mohammed al-Najjar and Amin al-Najjar arrived dead to the Al-Nasser hospital in Khan Yunis city in the southern Gaza Strip. Palestinian security sources said the Israeli airstrikes were carried out early on a Friday morning in the Khuza'a village to the east of Khan Yunis city in southern Gaza Strip. On a Friday midday, medical sources in the northern part of the Palestinian coastal region reported that an Israeli shelling left 6 Palestinians killed and 17 injured, among them children. A total of 8 Palestinians, including 3 children, were killed on Wednesday in 3 Israeli airstrikes that targeted Gaza City. 2 fighters were killed shortly after attacking Nahal Oz Israeli military base and killing 2 soldiers. Eyewitnesses reported that the Israeli Air Force carried out a series of airstrikes that targeted areas in the eastern and northern parts of the Gaza Strip, killing 6 residents. Earlier on Wednesday morning, 1 Israeli soldier and 1 Palestinian resistance fighter were killed in clashes between Palestinian resistance fighters and Israeli troops invading the southern part of the Gaza Strip. On Wednesday midday, 5 Palestinian patients died after the Israeli army prevented them from leaving the coastal region. The 5 were chronically ill, and doctors said they have been attempting to get them out of Gaza for months to get the life-saving medical care they require, but the army refused their applications for exit permits. These deaths bring the number of Palestinian patients who died in Gaza due to the Israeli siege to 130, with reports of many more facing a risk of death due to the Western-backed Israeli siege. The Israeli army has placed the Gaza Strip under total siege since June 2007, leaving 1.5 million Gazans lacking fuel, medicine, food, and water. On Tuesday, a Palestinian fighter was killed by an Israeli army shell east of Jabalia refugee camp in northern part of the Gaza Strip. The sources said that two other Palestinians were injured in the same Israeli shelling. On Sunday, a five-year-old child was killed by Israeli army gunfire in the central Gaza Strip refugee camp of Al-Burayt. Abdullah Bahar, 5, was dead on arrival at the hospital from shrapnel entering various parts of his head and body. Witnesses said that an Israeli army force backed by tanks invaded the eastern areas of Al-Burayt refugee camp close to the Gaza-Israel border line and opened fire at residents' homes. On Saturday, a Palestinian farmer, Rifat Mansour, 33, was killed and another was injured after Israeli forces backed by armored vehicles invaded the Jabalia area north of the Gaza Strip and opened fire at farmers there. For IMEMC.org, this is Rami Al-Mighari in Gaza.
This week, the Israeli army has invaded the Palestinian communities in the West Bank at least 30 times. During those attacks, the Israeli troops kidnapped 65 Palestinian civilians. IMEMC's Manar Jabrin with the details.
With those 65 kidnapped by the Israeli army this week, the number of Palestinians living in the West Bank kidnapped by Israel since the beginning of 2008 has mounted to 875. Four Palestinians were shot and injured when the Israeli army invaded the village of Tafuh, located near the southern West Bank city of Hebron on Thursday. Local sources reported that Israeli troops stormed the village, then searched and ransacked a number of homes. Local youth hurled stones at the invading forces and the army fired rounds of live ammunition and rubber-coated metal bullets. Four were injured. Medical sources in the village said that the four sustained moderate wounds and were treated at a local clinic in the village. Palestinian medical sources reported on Wednesday evening that one Palestinian youth was shot and moderately wounded by Israeli military gunfire in Beit Rima village, north of the central West Bank city of Ramallah. The youth was identified as Jamal Samih al-Rimawi, 17. Local sources reported that clashes took place between dozens of youth and Israeli forces. The soldiers invaded the village from its western entrance. Soldiers fired rounds of live ammunition, concussion, and gas bombs. On Tuesday, the Israeli state prosecutor demanded an extension to the period given by the Israeli High Court of Justice to the army to justify the army decision to close schools and orphanages in the southern West Bank city of Hebron. On the 25th of February 2008, the General of Command, GOC, of the Israeli army issued closure, evacuation, and confiscation orders on properties and institutions funded by the Islamic Charitable Society based in Hebron City. Three schools and two orphanages serving 7,000 children, 300 of whom are living in the society buildings, faced an April 1st deadline for the closure. Abdul Karim Farrah, the legal advisor of the Islamic Charitable Society, says the society is legal and only answers to the Palestinian Authority law.
The society is legally registered and it's operating since 1962. It is located in the Palestinian Authority control areas, according to the Oslo Agreement, in which all control, management and security were given in those areas to the Palestinian Authority. So, the BA is the one responsible for this organization.
Last week, the society went to the Israeli High Court of Justice, which on April the 2nd had allotted the Israeli military 4 days to give the High Court full justification for the closure and evacuation. At the end of the period, which ended Monday, the army did not justify the closure order, and instead on Tuesday, they demanded more time. For IMEMC.org, this is Manar Jibril.
And that's just some of our news this week in Palestine. For constant updates, check out our website, imemc.org. Thank you for joining us from Occupy Bethlehem. This is Louisa Whiting, Ghassan Banoura.
by God, we've kicked Vietnam syndrome once and for all.
Let me describe briefly what happened. There were 114,000 separate aerial sorties in 42 days. That's one every 30 seconds. 88,000 tons of bombs were dropped. Only 7% of the bombs that fell upon Iraq were guided. 93% were free-falling bombs that hit where chance, necessity, and no free will took them. There were 38 aircraft lost by the United States in this slaughter. That number is less than the number of accidental losses in war games where no live ammunition is even used. No enemy aircraft rose to meet them. We know that. And no enemy anti-aircraft could reach them. And those who were there at the time know that. The United States claims to have lost 148 people. It concedes that the majority were from accident and friendly fire. There was not a single U.S. tank penetrated by an Iraqi missile. There was not a single B-52 downed by enemy fire. We had planes fly from Barksdale, Louisiana without ever touching the ground and return to Barksdale, Louisiana, having killed thousands of people on the ground they never saw. And one of those facts that the enemy of truth was television telling us about the surgical strikes. And nobody gets hurt. We just turn the lights out. We use fuel air explosives, and it incinerates people and it crushes people. And we used it against civilians and military personnel. We had missiles fired from submarines in the Eastern Mediterranean for sport, just to see how they worked. We had Tomahawk cruise missiles by the hundreds launched from the Persian Gulf, a couple of thousand miles from the places that they hit, totally out of range. We pulled a couple of old-fashioned battleships up there and dumped 2.1 million pounds of hot metal on southern Iraq around Basra and killing people with impunity. You remember General Kelly announced before the beginning of the so-called ground war. But there was no ground war. Name one battle. There wasn't a battle. There was a slaughter. General Kelly said when the troops finally moved forward, there are not many of them left alive to fight. And finally we learned that bulldozers and tanks with plows on the front came in and buried thousands, dead, wounded, and living. The Geneva Convention, written in the blood of millions and millions of people who died in World War II. And the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the United States Army, when asked how many casualties he thought we had inflicted on Iraqi military and civilians, said, frankly, that's not a figure I'm very much interested in. 48 hours after the ceasefire, on the direct order of General Schwarzkopf, as we know, major assaults occurred that took thousands of more lives. We killed at least 125,000 soldiers. We've killed to date more than 130,000 civilians. We killed as many as we dared.
I believe that the United Nations has emerged from this with great authority. It will go down to history as being the first really successful operation of the
I'm in the Alternative Information Centre in Beit Zahor, and I'm interviewing Linda Geraisi. Linda Geraisi is a women's health worker in Beit Zahor, and she's also an active women's campaigner for women's rights in general. And what we're going to be discussing today is the effect of occupation on women's lives in Palestine. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you a lot. As you mentioned, I am a health educator. I'm working with women, and I am working with the students at schools and at community. Really, we have a very big problem in Palestine, which is occupation. Occupation affects our life day by day, time, every moment. And on my work, I see many women, when they come to have lecture or to do something together, depressed, they didn't want to talk, and they are not active. So when we discuss with them, we notice that they have many, many problems. Some of them, their husbands, they are not working because of the wall. They couldn't go inside Israel to work. So they have no money to feed their children. They have no money to in their house. And it's very difficult for women to cope in this situation. Some women, I see that when I discuss with them, they said that their husband at jail, and they couldn't visit him because the Israeli military, they didn't allow them, they didn't give permission for them to see their husbands or the children, their children. And I know many women, husband and one of two children together at jail. And it's very difficult for women to cope in the situation because she didn't have money to cope. She didn't work. And second, she didn't strong enough to lead the family. So it's very difficult for this woman to cope with this situation. And I noticed that many, they have stress and they have depression. And it's a very, very bad because if the woman, she's leading the house and she has depression, how the children could be? They will be depressed. They will be not active. They will be unuseful. And I think it's very hard for Palestinian community if we have many samples like that.
So the occupation is taking a psychological toll, and in this society, women are the centre of the family. They, I see that women keep the children together. They keep their husbands together. They keep their parents together. They really are the core. Mm-hmm. And when there's no money, there's no support, they're unable to do what's expected of them.
Some of them, they looking for work. For example, they work broideries. They try to work broideries, and it's not. They didn't gain much money from that work. And some of them, they work as working at houses, or some of them, they couldn't find a work. But really, as you mentioned, that I am active in women's organizations. There are many women organizations. They take care about women issues, and they make some workshops or lectures about depression, about how the women can cope with this situation. And I think we succeed in some cases, but still we couldn't reach many women. They have the same condition.
What kind of strategies do you use to help women cope? How do you advise women so they can stay strong in the face of this adversity?
There are two things to make her very strong, which is education and to be independent economically. So we try for these women to make them independent economically by to work with women organization, to work in some of them they work in agriculture, some of them work in embroidery, and we have women organization. They take the embroidery from these women and they sell it, and they give them the money, and by this way, and by lecture, and by this way, to make them work, we think that we help these women and these families.
Last year I spoke to people from women's organisations in Nablus, and they said that during when the army invades so regularly, this has an impact on the relations between the husband and wife, because the husband is often humiliated by the army. How does this affect the family in your experience, these kinds of situations?
Yeah, it's very important. It's affect the family psychologically, and we have many organizations, especially here in Bethlehem, which work in with the families, with the father, with the mother, and with the family all at home. And we have very good trainers in this issue, and we send these families to that organization to work with them. We succeed in that.
How do you approach the family? Do you approach the family after maybe their house has been occupied by the army, and then you ask them if they need help?
You know, I am a nurse, and I'm working in health work committee, and we have clinics in from Jenin to Gaza. Many women, they came to the clinic and they talk about their problems because they were under pressure. She wants to take medicine or to do something in the clinic, but she talks because we always listen to women, because we know that nobody sometimes listen to her. So as nurses, we listen to the to women, and we have like a net, our clinics, and we give the names of the women and from where she is, and we try to find a place like organization I told you before to send her to help her.
Do you remember the first kiss? Stars shooting across the sky. To come to such a place as this. You never left my mind. We'll be right back.
they discuss the social and political problems, and that's what's really affecting their health is this situation.
You know, in our organization, Health Work Committee, we look to health as a whole, which means everything affects health, psychological, social, economical, everything. So we know that because we believe in that, so we talk to women and we try to help women even to find a job or to go to organization to ask for help psychologically or emotionally, or we discuss all these things at clinic. So we try to send a woman to a place she needs.
It's Prisoners' Day on the 17th of April, and I was here in 2006, and I remember all the women marching through Bethlehem to Manger Square to hold up pictures of their relatives in prison. That was when I really saw that women are keeping the society together under occupation. Yes. How do women cope? I know that the Prisoners' Society gives money for the family, but I know all that money is given to the prisoners. So how do women cope when their husbands, brothers, uncles are in prison?
First, we have to talk about how she feels, because my husband was at jail, and I know exactly how women feel when she's alone without husband. She's alone in a family, and here as a community, as Palestinian community or as Arab community, it's not easy for a woman to be alone, and the community sometimes make pressure for her. It's not easy at all. I know that. So she has to be strong enough to cope emotionally, to be strong from inside. It's very, very hard. I think for her and for her children, she has to be strong. And I discussed this with many women. They said, I am strong in front of my family and in front of my children. But when I am alone, I'm crying until I feel that I am very weak. I know this because I live in this situation. But women organization now, they try to make the woman to talk about that. And talking about her problem is half of the it solves half of her problem, because for the woman to feel that there is somebody to listen, they are listening to her problem, it's very important. And if they, women organization, they try to find job for them. And I didn't want to say that all of women, they have a job, but some of them, they do. So nowadays, it's a network for the women organization to help these women. Here in our society, no women can go outside until she will tell her husband before. We ask these women if she wants to work, to ask her husband first, because some of husbands, they didn't like women to work outside. They want her at home. When she work outside and he released, they will continue their life like this, because he agreed that she work outside. And I think, I know many families, they succeed. Their way of living, it becomes much, much good.
Yani, improved.
Yeah, improved, yeah.
What are women doing politically? Is there women's campaigns in Palestine against the war? Is there women's campaigns to support prisoners? What kind of other things are women doing?
Women organization first, they have a network. They meeting, I think, every two weeks. They try to make many activities like demonstration in Women's Day, in Land Day for prisoners, or etc. And they have some projects, small projects. They try to make the women work in that project. And many women organizations ask me as a health educator to go to the villages to speak about women's health, because they need that. And if the woman has problem, we can refer her to our clinics, and she will have the treatment free.
Women often in the UK, there's had to be big health campaigns to say to women in the UK, it's okay to speak about breast cancer, it's okay to speak about cervical cancer, get checked, because women, these things were taboos. It was a secret if you had cancer. You didn't want to tell anyone you were ill. Is that like that in Palestine?
Yes, it's like that, but we make many campaigns about breast cancer and cervix cancer. And just yesterday I was in Jericho to give lecture about how you discover. I learned them how to do breast self-examination. I teach them. They can do mammography or pap smear, and they can do it freely in our clinics. And I tell them where, in Beit Sahour or in Ramallah, because in Jericho we didn't have clinic. But the women were very happy because this is the first time they heard about that issue. No one tell them about breast self-examination. No one tell them about pap smear. So they asked me to come again to make many lectures to Jericho, and I will do that. So we are working in prevention. So if you tell them that it's a prevention, if you make this, the pap smear or this the mammography, they will accept that. And most of them, yesterday I have 45 women in the lecture, and most of them, they want to do the test. I working as health educator since 5-6 years. And yeah, in the beginning, it was taboo, and no one wants to talk about this, especially the families, they have the disease. But now, I face many women, they want to know, and they want to do the test. I don't think I see that many women in villages, they accept and they want to do, and they have many questions. Before 2 months, I was in Nahalin. There are 55 women in my lecture. It's about breast cancer and cervical cancer. Most of them, they went to our clinic in Husan to do the test. And I was very pleased when I heard the doctor. She said, I have from your lecture 45 ladies, they came and they do the test, which is pap smear. And I think I'm succeed in that.
What do you think is the best hope for women in Palestine at the moment for surviving the occupation?
I think I think women should be strong. I think there are two ways to make the woman strong, which is education. She has to be good educated, and second, to be independent economically. So if she has these two things, she will be strong. Her family will be strong, because I think that woman is the key of the family, and when their family is strong, they will together, they will have a very good life, and they will do many steps against incubation or against many things they face.
When you spoke at AIC, you mentioned that you were going to speak in Scandinavia about women's issues, about women's health issues in the West Bank and Gaza. The Israeli government didn't let you out.
This happened in 2005. I have invitation from Sweden to go to share in a women's conference. It talks about non-violence. And when I went to the border, Israeli border, they took me to the captain, the Shabak, and he questioning me for 3 hours, and he said, we couldn't let you out of the country, and they didn't give me a reason for that. So when I'm back to Beit Sahur, I have a good friend. She's a lawyer, and I talk to her, and she work in my case. And after 2 years, I could go to the same conference.
It took you 2 years to get the permission?
Yes, 2 years to have a permission to go outside the country.
So I guess under occupation, you have to be very patient.
Yes, we learn how to be very patient. We learn that from our life.
I guess because your husband was in prison. He was a political prisoner. He wasn't in prison because he was a criminal. In Palestine, Israel has something like 400,000 men and women and children held politically. And they're not allowed to know why they're being held very often. And they're held under a law of the British Mandate, which is called administrative detention, which means it's a preventative imprisonment. So you haven't actually done anything. You're taken away and you're held for 6 months, and then you go back to the military court. You don't know what the evidence is against you. And then you are either let out after 6 months or more often than not put back into prison. The situation in prison is really harsh. And your husband, how long was your husband held in prison for?
In demonstration detainee, he has about 3 years. Every 6 months they renew it. He was at prison in 1989 for 4 years. And after that, they take him for administrative detention for 6 years. And then they release them after 10 months. 6 months, and every 6 months they renew it automatically, so without any reason. We didn't know the reason till now.
So when they take them, was he taken at a checkpoint, or did the army come to your home to take him back to prison?
The first time from my home, but the second time in the checkpoint.
It's very frightening for men to travel around Palestine because they could just be taken at a checkpoint.
Yes, it's very frightening. And now I have a child. He's studying in Birzeit University. I am very stressed when he will come from Ramallah to Bethlehem, because there are many checkpoints, and sometimes they take people or they hit people without any reason. So as a mother, I am under stress always when he wants to come and to go, because it's not safe.
I know that something like every man in Palestine will spend, on average, at least 7 years in prison. Is that right?
Yes, this is right. And every person, every Palestinian person, maybe he will be at prison without any reason. I didn't mean of person that just men, maybe women or children, and there are many children at prison, and you can have some statistics that shows that there are many children at prison. And to take people without any reason, and they kept them without any reason, this happened many, many times, and there are many cases like that.
It's not only women whom their husbands are wanted. There are many women who are not married at the prison. Women, their husbands wanted, and others. And now, more than around 600, 800 women they arrested during the period of Al-Aqsa Intifada, but they released them now, there are 128 women in the prison. 10 of them they deliver at the prison, and they take their children away from them. They didn't let them to feed them, to do for them breastfeeding. See, all human rights for human beings here in Palestinian abused. And daily, from 20 to 30 person, the military state, they arrest the soldiers. Some of them at checkpoints, some of them from their homes, and not everybody who is arrested, as they claim, they are terrorists. Many of them, they have nothing to do with politics even.
What do the Israeli prisons do with the newborn babies? Where do they put them?
They keep them actually with their women up to 2 years, but they didn't let the in different room. They didn't let the mother keep her child with her all the time. And after 2 years, they take them away from them, from the prison. They send them to their grandfathers or grandmothers. And we have many cases that the father and the mother, they arrested for a children, 4 or 3 years or 6 years. And those, they are living with some, one with his grandmother, one with his grandfather, and or with their aunts. There is no family. They broke all the family. They break all the family.
What do you think is the political goal of doing this? What is Israel trying to achieve by putting families in prison?
The occupation, they want the land without people. So they make many pressure, they make many things to make us to leave the country. Because they want the land, they didn't want us as Palestinians. So they do some things like that to fed up from the situation and to go to leave the country.
The conflict between Israeli and Palestinian will never end. And they know that they are, they have weapons, they have all, they are the fifth state in the world, military. As a Palestinian only, we have our will to stay in our land, just to, because then we don't have another choice, not for any other reason. The only choice that we have is to stay in our land, because many people in 48, they leave their lands, and they now refugee, and they still, they are suffering, and they are complaining. And now the Palestinian, they know that there is no another way to leave their lands another time. If you are living in Palestine for a long time, you will wonder how Palestinian can live in this condition. You will wonder. Nobody believe that. Still, we are able to go to our work, to continue our life, and living in this country.
You were describing what happened with your husband and your fear about your son crossing the checkpoint to go to Ramallah from Bethlehem. The army does come in the night. Do women suffer from nightmares? Do women suffer from not being able to sleep? Do the whole family suffer from this?
The women, they suffer from nightmare, afraid, because usually it's you are right. Many the psychosocial stress, the women and children, and we notice that a lot with our children. They are aggressive. They are drop out of school increase, and they don't have the will to learn, to go to the school. And even the way they play with each other, you know, it's if you only sit and watch the children, the way they are play, you feel afraid, because everything against the values we like for our children to have, you know. The same with the women also. Many, even it's reflected on their health. Many women, they came to the clinic, they have headache, they have temperature, they have abdominal pain, they have vomiting because of psychological stress. So there is nothing. Physically, there is nothing. No, lab test show it's okay, everything. But when she start talking and she do release the stress that she has, I remember one day, A woman came to the clinic. All the night, the soldiers were at her home, and they arrested her son. He was about 17 years, and he was studying for the final exam. And they arrest her child from home while he was studying. And all the night it was cold, and all the night they keep them outside home. So next day she came to our clinic in Hussein village, and she started crying, talking. And she came at the beginning at the doctor because she has abdominal pain, she has headache, she has all signs and symptoms of a disease. But when she started talking and crying, and she released the stress, she become better.
Yes, many women, they have full of fear. They are not sleeping all the night. Yeah, we have many women like that, and they face many diseases like headache, or like Victoria said, we try to help these women in our clinics, and we try to send them to some organizations I told you before. So this is what we can do for these women.
What do Israeli women's groups say? Do you get any help from any women's groups inside Israel?
Never.
You know, before 2000, I have a friend. She's writing to my husband while he is at jail, and after his death, she came to my house third times, and she kept contact to talk to me. And after Al-Aqsa Intifada, she didn't talk, because once she was talking at me and the bomb was bombing near my house, and I was afraid, and I was very excited. So I said, you have to do something. You didn't do anything for us as Palestinians. You have to come to see how they destroy Beit Sahur, how they destroy my neighbor house, and I'm afraid with my children at home. And after this time, she didn't call me.
Well, thank you very much. I've been speaking with Victoria Shukri and Linda Jawasi, two amazing women health workers inside Palestine. Let's hope that there is a future, and let's hope that there is a peace, and that Palestinians can have a life without fear.
This is our faith.
Que les choses changent en Haïti au service du peuple haïtien.
Pratique, j'aime toujours créer sous politique. Ma musique, ma pensée dans critique. M'sais yon nègue critique, fanatique. Qui sac mathématique, cric, crac. M'pas j'aime toucher crac, bon m'racine moins. M'pas j'aime droguer racine moins. Tout m'en initié moins, pour m'pas j'ai dit payer moins. Tout c'est ouvert chimène pour libérer haïtien. Tout aimer les siens, même si le pays est dans le bassin. Plein du nord, nos grands saisons fleuries en or. Nous riches n'en font qu'un, nous on s'en fiche des mots cris, nous j'en danser. Tant qu'on prend un bois chiche ou hachiche. Bel amour, l'aigle non nous pas chiche. Nous pas qu'à prendre un fétiche. Son bouc marine en tambour, accrassine ma peau. Nous célébrer qu'il dit nous. Des bijoux fait jour, personne pas qu'à stopper nous. Quand pas au kipé yo, pas ouais yo, en roue yo.
Y'a pas de coyo qui te met les navets. En plaisir, nous vite chanter sous ton mousse. En chanter, vite danser dans racine. En lever, vite café dans racine. Y'a pas de coyo qui te met les navets. En plaisir, nous vite chanter sous ton mousse. En chanter, vite danser dans racine. En lever, vite café dans racine. Est-ce que
y'a pas de. Est-ce que y'a sauces.
Your mind, bro.
It's for your body.
It's for your soul, bro.
It's for your soul.
vieux matches.
Gardez nos yeux, m'rassez même nous-mêmes nouillés. Nèg de 101 indépendants, nèg célébré. Coup d'état avoué. Nèg marron, t'es contre bonnet. Race collante, qui n'est pas primace. Retirez grâce nos yeux, nèg peureux. C'est nos basses grenouillés. Crase les chaînes, ou prends pays, ou moins songer. Premier beat, c'est l'aime, t'es frappé n'importe maman. Premier danse, moi c'est l'aime, t'es n'importe maman. T'avec maquette, t'as baille coup de pied. Côté m'fête, quittez mélo. Racine, moi c'est tambour. Map disque, t'es accent, pour les nègres qui s'en foutent. On héritage, qui gagne rage. Cap fait ravage, on barrage. Cap m'a décourage. Rage, rage. Fait que content, pas coûter médias. Yo jouda, ça yo dit c'est patra. Violence, red ça, et ça. Gat qui j'en yo prend loi. N'a tout côté, gain vie, gain espoir.
Y'a pas de grand yo qui te mêle les navets. En plaisir, on veut chanter sous ton mousse. En chantier, vite danser dans racine. En levé, vite café dans racine ça. Y'a pas de grand yo qui te mêle les navets. En plaisir, on veut chanter sous ton mousse. En chantier, vite danser dans racine. En levé, vite café dans racine ça.
Devant bon Dieu, devant l'histoire, devant l'humanité, pour un petit peuple à toute vérité. Même là, la vie nous a tout ça nous possède en danger, danger, danger.
L'autre moitié histoire, y'a pas j'en doulé. L'autre bon médaille là, y'a pas j'en montrôlé. Y'a trois doigts cap gado, le long j'en doit être souli. Tant pour ça, racine ça, vine danser souli. Tigé des nègres, nago, femme Congo. Mara ça a changé pour tant couillon, bisango. 200 ans d'aptan, demandé qu'il est napco. Libéré esclave haïtien, Santo Domingo. La caille est à veille, oh. Ma poussa pas la poussa. Gain l'intuition, répression, faut en faire régression. Haïti cap, mandé la charité à toute nation. À deux mètres, tandis qu'on chante les plus belles pays, passé ou non point. Dicotomillon, culture qui mangeait d'Alcuba. Noué tant coup africain, blanc tant coup diaspora. Classe moyenne haïtienne, n'a pas même citoyenne. Négré traverse l'Atlantique, je dis à ces gosses Mexique.
Y'a pas de grand yo qui te mêle les navets. En plaisir, on veut chanter sous ton mousse. En chantier, vite danser dans racine. En levé, vite café dans racine ça. Y'a pas de grand yo qui te mêle les navets. En plaisir, on veut chanter sous ton mousse. En chantier, vite danser dans racine. En levé, vite café dans racine ça. Est-ce que your body? Est-ce que your soul says?
Cette laideur, cette grâce, cette profonde solitude renvoient à une profonde servitude l'homme haïtien, pris dans le filet jaloux de ses graines mystiques, tissé sur une pauvreté de démunis, à la limite du vivable. Et ça et là, comme des îlots de ferveur collective, les hommes et les femmes de ces confrères qui, venus du fin fond d'Haïti, gardent encore l'amour des dieux, l'amour du sacré africain. L'espoir.